Welcome, everyone. We will call the either final or penultimate meeting of the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue to order. And we have one bill on our agenda today, and so I will open a public hearing on House Bill 4093. Christine.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 49-3, the A engrossed version, would increase the number of rural enterprise zones that may be designated from 17 zones to 20 zones, and the number of urban or rural enterprise zones from the current 15 zones to 20 zones. It also allows the rural enterprise zones to increase to 15 square miles in size and to also have 15 miles as the greatest distance between two points. It leaves alone the size limits of urban enterprise zones, which are at 12 square miles. It also allows a sponsor of a terminated enterprise zone to apply for a new enterprise zone 10 years after the termination of the previous zone. And also it has some reporting requirements for the new rural and urban enterprise zones that are a result of this measure. The fiscal impact is minimal on the bill, and then the revenue impact is negative $2.4 million in 11-13 and on up to negative $8.6 million in 2015-17. And that's just based on the assumption that the new zones would be similar to the ones that are in existence already.
And this would not be general fund impact. This would be local property tax, correct?
Correct. And there is a caveat in here that there would be some offsetting positive revenues to the state general fund. To the extent that enterprise zones stimulate new business activity, and that would increase corporate and personal income tax revenue.
That's not quantified.
No.
Okay, thank you. We'll start with the panel, Chris Vick and Hannison Jackisman. Committee.
Thank you, Chair Burdick. Members of the committee, for the record, Jack Esselman, I appear before you today on behalf of the Oregon Economic Development Association. We represent over three dozen economic development professionals across the state of Oregon. And many of those officials are enterprise zone managers under this statute. And a number of them testified before the House Revenue Committee, and if they were here before you today, they would tell you about the great efficacy of this tool as they go about their work. It is probably stands first among several tools that are available to economic development professionals in the state. And I know this committee has a good familiarity with the tool. We recently extended the sunset of the program just last session. We believe it is an opportune time to take a look at potential expansions to the program. We're aware of a number of communities that do not have enterprise zones, some of whom will be before you later, who would like enterprise zones, and this would give them the opportunity to enact those. And again, this is the role of the legislature here is enabling. It's letting the local community make the choice about whether or not they want to abate property taxes in certain circumstances where they believe they can attract jobs and over time reap a larger community benefit as a result of those abated taxes. So I'm joined by my colleagues from the Association of Oregon Counties and the League of Oregon Cities, and we collectively commend this measure and hope you will send it to the floor of the Senate. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else want to speak?
Ann Hannes with the Association of Oregon Counties. Chair Burdick, members of the committee, I also want to voice up my support, strong support for this bill. This is a voluntary program that counties can enter into. We found it to be a very effective tool for attracting business and encouraging them to expand, and we urge your support. Thank you.
Yep.
Chris Fick with the League of Oregon Cities. I'll keep it short as well. As has already been mentioned, there is a demand for some of these new enterprise zones amongst cities of Beaverton, Tigard, Sherwood, and Tualatin all have an interest in some of these new zones that would be created with passage of this bill. As Jack said, this is a critical toolbox for cities to have when they're trying to foster economic development. And we urge you to report it out favorably.
Now, why would you mention the cities of Tigard and Beaverton? I
it just sprung to mind.
All right. Thank you. Questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Okay, Nikki and JL.
Good afternoon, Nikki Terziev on behalf of the City of Beaverton. We are, as just previously mentioned, one of those communities that would be seeking one of these newly developed enterprise zones. We are a city of over 90,000. We currently have about 61,000 jobs. We have a growth goal by 2030 to get to about 90,000 jobs. This is going to be a vital tool that gets us there. More than just a benefit for the city, it's also a benefit for the region. As you look at the economic planning for the region, we provide a little black hole between Portland and Hillsborough, and we believe this is a great bill and something that will be of considerable help. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. For the record, J.L. Wilson representing Associated Oregon Industries in support of House Bill 4093. We think it's an important economic development tool for local jurisdictions with high unemployment rates and low median incomes. It gives these communities the ability to control their economic destiny. And one of the things we heard in this committee, when the Facebook bill was up, the county commissioners repeatedly said the tax abatements were a secondary consideration. What they really wanted was the jobs, and that's a sentiment that's echoed throughout the state. And when we advocated for renewal of the Enterprise Zone Program 2011 in the height of our economic recession, just in the last 2 years alone, enterprise zone projects have accounted for 163 projects, $1.8 billion in private investment in the state, and 6,500 new full-time jobs. Quite a track record in a down economic period. So we support the concept and we support the bill. Urge its passage.
Thank you very much. Questions from the committee? Thank you. Okay, Mark Landauer and Jody Weiser.
Jody Weiser with Taxpayers Oregon. So we know for sure that enterprise zones have been very successful in reducing taxation and the amount of revenue we receive. What we don't know, as we heard in the last session when we were trying to decide whether to increase it, to extend the sunset for enterprise zones, is whether there's been any substantive study that shows that they're actually successful. If you compare areas in and out of enterprise zones, is there really a difference? We know they'll work because we'll be told that they worked. We'll be told that they're the reason this business or that business came to Oregon or expanded. But states without enterprise zones have business growth, and we have business growth both inside and outside of enterprise zones. We know that if the state, that as the funding formula for education works, if a local community produces less revenue of their own, their educational funding is backfilled by the state. And so they're not experiencing the loss of education dollars that they would experience if it weren't backfilled. And we wonder if they would have the same support for enterprise zones if the schools were suffering every time they didn't collect the money that they're not collecting from enterprise zones. So the question with this bill is, how many enterprise zones does this state need to have? We have 60 now. So do we know that another 8 is the right number, or do we need the whole state to be inside of an enterprise zone? Where is the magic number? The original version of this bill increased enterprise zones in every way. The size, the number, and the number of years for which you had eligibility. The number of years piece was taken out. But I think the fact that they didn't know which was the operative thing to change is kind of proof of how we don't know what is good or what works and doesn't work about enterprise zones. What we're required, a business is required to do, is have one new job or a 10% increase in the number of employees they have. And those jobs will reduce taxes received by 3, 5, or 15 years, depending upon where the business is, an additional 2 years if the business is building a new facility. So last session we extended the sunset, and we did it without deeper knowledge. And here we're facing this again. Today I emailed you a database about Oregon's enterprise zones. And in that, there are a number of examples that I think help us understand the questions we should have. Energy 2 invested $28 million inside an enterprise zone, and they're supposed to create 30 new employees in that zone. The tax subsidy, if we assume that it's the tax base in every enterprise zone is $10 per thousand, and that's obviously it's higher in some parts of the state and lower in some parts of the state. But if for each of the examples is set, has a tax base of $10 per thousand, then our tax subsidy for these 30 jobs is $9,333 a year. And since that's almost three times what the average family in the state pays in taxes, we're losing money on that investment. We're losing significant amount of money on those 30 jobs. At the Synergy Data Center, they made a small investment, only $775,000, and they only expect one new employee. Our subsidy for that employee on the $10 per thousand formula is $7,750. One employee is unlikely to produce that much in income taxes. T. Girding Construction made a $2 million investment. In this case, our foregone property taxes would be $20,000 for their one job. And Snow Temp, Eugene Freezing made a $15 million investment with two new and 20 retained jobs. The annual cost per new job would be $75,000 in foregone taxes. Or if you count both, the subsidy per job is still $6,800 per job, well above what we receive in income taxes for jobs. We need to follow the example of other states and look at what the sidebars are for our enterprise zone jobs. We shouldn't be subsidizing jobs that lower our per capita income. We should not give away property taxes for more than the amount of money we're going to collect from the income taxes. Recently, Good Jobs First did an evaluation of three programs, the three biggest subsidy programs for economic development in each state. And Oregon got a D- in their scoring, because we had inadequate job standards. And if you look at their document, which is a fairly lengthy document, and I've given you the website where you could read it, you'll see that in some states the job requirements are quite high. The requirements that you provide health care are quite high. The requirements for training are quite a bit higher, and those are the kinds of expectations that we simply don't have in our program. We simply say one job or 10% job growth, and that's all we require in this program. And it simply is not protecting us enough. Thank you.
Thank you. Mark.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Mark Landauer, representing the Special Districts Association of Oregon. It will come as no surprise to you that the Special Districts opposes this bill, and our opposition to this program primarily rests on the notion that the only eligible entities to create an enterprise zone are cities and counties. And as a result, cities and counties have the ability to unilaterally take away or subsidize jobs with property taxes that have been exempted that are used by other governmental entities, overlapping districts such as community colleges, schools, schools, special districts, and the like. Our concern with this program is simply that we do not have a say whatsoever in how those property taxes are going to be used. And we have consistently over the years asked for the opportunity to play a larger role in either advising the sponsor or having an opt-out in this program so that those overlapping districts can have a say in how their expected revenue will be spent. I'm confident that if the cities or counties were in the same position as other local taxing jurisdictions, they would want the same opportunity. There are some concerns that we've had with this program as well, and they're generally outlined in my written testimony that I've provided to you this afternoon. I'll just briefly mention a couple of them. We do believe that there ought to be more rigorous reporting in the program, and I would just like to thank co-speaker Hannah, who was the primary sponsor of this bill. This bill is certainly better than it was from its original form. It has been modified in a manner that we're certainly a bit more comfortable with. Nevertheless, we do believe that there ought to be more rigorous reporting standards for the entire program rather than just the 8 new enterprise zones being that are going to be created under this bill. With that, if the state truly wants to say that we are open for business, an alternative would simply be to just eliminate this program and extend the new construction tax exemption that exists in our statutes from 1 year to 2 to 3 years for both commercial and industrial property. I don't know what would scream louder than that by saying that the state of Oregon is open for business. There's a lot of overhead that is involved in this program, and quite frankly, a lot of that could be eliminated by just creating a statewide property tax exemption for commercial and industrial properties in this state for 2 to 3 years, and we can be done with the administrative overhead that's involved with this program. With that, I'd be happy to take any questions that you may have, and thank you for the opportunity to express our concerns with the bill.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Have we had discussions in the past about giving special districts more voice in the matter? It sounds like kind of
yes.
A familiar issue.
Madam Chair, we've discussed this matter for the last decade with the legislature about our concerns about having no voice whatsoever in the disposition or creation of these. We are advised about the creation of enterprise zones, but the advice and commonly jurisdictions will work to an extent with special districts, but there's nothing in the statute that requires them to accept any advice or recommendations that the overlapping taxing jurisdictions have. And as a result, over the last decade or so, we have been asking for either the opt-out or greater say in the process of the creation of these enterprise zones. None of that has been adopted to this point by the legislature.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Senator Telfer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Weiser, in your testimony, you talked about property taxes not received in relationship to general fund taxes from the employment of those people. Do you have any statistics so that we can compare apples to apples and saying the jobs created by people who now own personal or real property, houses, et cetera, that are paying property taxes in place of the taxes not received in an enterprise zone by their employer?
You mean the person, it's a new, is it, would,
They've come to Oregon because the business came to Oregon, and so they're now paying property taxes on the personal residence.
No. Economic development creates jobs.
Right.
Obviously, income taxes are generated from that. Those people also buy homes.
Right.
They're now paying property taxes on properties that don't exist right now. So do you have comparison statistics to compare the property taxes that would be realized from these new employees with new houses versus the...
No.
That's really apples to apples.
Except that would assume that every new employee didn't have a house before the job was created. And, of course, hopefully they're hiring people who are unemployed but are here already and have houses and are paying property taxes.
Not necessarily. I mean, some of this is new jobs. This isn't just to put unemployed people back to work. The enterprise zones that exist currently wasn't an issue of unemployment. So I'm looking for apples to apples with property taxes, property taxes paid by new.
As far as I can tell, none of the, there's no reporting on who was hired aside from how many positions were filled. So we wouldn't know how many of those people were already here and how many were new to the state. I think it would be really hard to come up with that. But, you know, I hear sometimes people, particularly because I'm in Washington County, I think, say, well, you know, look at all the income taxes of the employees of Intel. And personally, I find that offensive because I believe that when I was a teacher, Portland Public Schools did not pay my income taxes. I paid my income
taxes.
That
wasn't my question. My question was really just trying to make apples-to-apples comparisons with property taxes paid by new employees with new real estate.
Well, we could look for that, I would think.
But the other question is, and this is probably more for the committee, in that that testimony says there are 60 enterprise zones, and yet the staff, SMS, basically says there are 27.
Yeah, I had a question.
So I'm wondering what the difference of the numbers are.
Senator Telford, this is on top of a base of 30 enterprise zones that are existing, and so that limit was applicable to a certain period of time with the last legislation that was passed to expand it. And then this is a further expansion on top of that. So
when you say currently the number of enterprise zones is limited to 17 rural and 10 urban or rural zones, that's on top of the existing 30?
That's on top of the existing 30, okay. So there are 57 altogether. I should clarify that.
Thank you. Other questions?
No, Chair.
Senator
Just
Warren.
As a follow-up to Senator Telford, a job is the beginning of upward mobility, and I think that's what you were really focusing on, is when somebody has a job and what that then means downstream versus not having a job and comparing, you know, the full effect to the specific effect of the tax abatement is really what I think she's focusing on. But it's that upward mobility and the economic impact of that is, I mean, that's what makes...
If we're thinking of our kids, for instance, getting it, they don't have a house, they don't have a job, they get a job, they get a house, there's a whole cycle there of growth in that community, wherever it is.
Right.
Other questions? Okay. Thank you very much. We will close the public hearing on House Bill 4093, unless there was somebody, I didn't see anybody jumping down, so I won't worry about that. So we will open a work session on House Bill 4093, and we have no amendments, correct, Christine? Senator Morris, I know you were a little late here, but do you feel comfortable making a motion?
I do, Madam Chair. I move House Bill 4093 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris has moved House Bill 4093 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Hess, would you like to carry this?
Be happy to.
Thrilled. Okay, that completes our business committee. Stay tuned for further action from this committee. I don't know of anything at this point, but who knows at this point. We are adjourned. What did you say? What did you say?